Are you a lawyer who desires more freedom and flexibility in your work life? To be more available for your family, stop deferring those bucket list travel destinations until retirement, take care of yourself physically and mentally, or even just have more time for your other passions and priorities. What would it mean for your life if you could continue to practice law without sacrificing in any of these areas or sacrificing your income? I'm Kaylee Jacquemet, host of the Lawyer on Your Terms podcast. I run a six-figure virtual law practice working less than 25 hours a week. I'm a mom of two little ones and started my practice so I wouldn't have to choose between my vision of motherhood and my legal career. Your dreams and priorities may be different, but if you're curious about how to create a practice that is designed around your most important priorities in life, rather than always having to fit your life around your career, then you're in the right place. You, my friend, are more than just a lawyer, and you can lawyer on your own terms. Welcome to the Lawyer on Your Terms podcast. Let's dive into today's episode. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. Today, I am joined by Doug Bradley. He is the owner of Everest Legal Marketing, which is a digital marketing agency for law firms throughout the U.S. Welcome, Doug.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, thank you. Can you tell everyone a little bit more about yourself and how you got started in this industry?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you mentioned, I own Everest Legal Marketing. We specialize in search engine optimization for law firms. And I got into this, I guess you could say a little by accident. I worked for a major legal directory selling advertising and SEO campaigns to law firms. And during my tenure there, I realized that they didn't do a very good job with SEO. And if I wanted any of my sales to stick, I really had to massage the campaigns myself, put personal input into it in order to make them effective and productive for the clients. Otherwise, the clients wouldn't pay their bills and I'd get a chargeback. So I kind of had to teach myself trial by fire a little bit how to make these campaigns work. And I got really dang good at it. And one day they fired everybody because they sold the company to another company, which is, you know, par for the course. And I said to myself, well, I already kind of have this skill. I'm pretty good at it. I wonder if I can make a living at it. And I just kind of started doing it on the side. And then I had the opportunity to do it full time and I took it.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a great example of a moment where it could be a real low moment is actually a grand opportunity for something that has become your career and a really successful business and has impacted so many other people as well. So Doug, yeah. We connected years ago when I was just starting my law practice and I was doing freelance legal content writing for you. And so I just want to talk about that for a minute because I've mentioned it before on this podcast and it's something that I also mention in my program. A lot of most of the people who come through my program are female attorneys who want more flexibility for their families, but they want to continue bringing in income and continue in their law career. But a real concern is, am I going to get enough clients? Am I going to make enough money? And you do need to have a plan to bridge that gap in income. And so there are many ways to do that. But my way of doing that was freelance legal content writing. And this was something that it was, you know, it was reliable. And I had other opportunities at the time to do some contingency work for another attorney. But I saw that that work was going to just take my focus away from the business that I was trying to build and take a lot more of my time away. And I was going to be working for him, not working for myself. And the legal content writing really was a great opportunity to, you know, write articles while my daughter was napping or after she went to sleep.
Absolutely.
That was a really great thing. So I think that's another opportunity people should be aware of.
Yeah. Almost all of my writers are actually JDs. And I find many of my writers either through LinkedIn, they've posted something saying that they do legal writing, or they approach me and say, hey, I'm an attorney. I'm a practicing attorney, but I like writing. And I'd like to make a side income doing that. And it helps supplement income. And I absolutely love that relationship. It's really one of the only things that I look for now. I completely ignore solicitations from other content sources that are non-US JDs simply because I'd rather pay an attorney a premium for the content that they create that doesn't have to get edited and re-edited by the client. And so I think it's an absolutely awesome way to make a little extra money.
Right. And as you said, so I have tried to experiment in the past with hiring a non-lawyer to help me with my own blog articles, because that's the kind of the thing that falls to the bottom of your to-do list, right? You're focused on client work, and then your own marketing can just, sure, you know, be put to the wayside. So I tried to experiment with friends, people I knew who I knew they were excellent writers. I knew they were good writers. And so I just had a lot of confidence. Oh, you're going to be able to write these articles, no problem. And then I reviewed them, and there's just this nuance when you're not, you know, you don't have a legal education, you're not trained, right, in the law, the way that you communicate something, it's just so off enough that I can imagine that that's become a priority to you in, you know, in finding freelance writers.
Yeah, it's definitely a balance that needs to be struck between giving good information that's palatable for the average person who's going to be reading it, but also being legally accurate. Right, and right. I think it's much more difficult to be legally accurate, which is why I err on the side of hiring attorneys to do this work rather than a content writer who's really good at doing a wide variety of different types of content.
Right. So that's a good segue into some of the questions that I wanted to ask you today.
Great.
So when you are creating this content through your business for your clients who are law firms, you are focusing on content that is going to be easily digestible to a lay reader. So these are the people who are looking for legal services. Let's say it's a personal injury law firm or estate, mm-hmm, planning. You want it to be understandable to them. They're seeking out answers to questions, and you want to answer their question. And you can't do that if you're talking over their head or filling it with a bunch of legalese. And I know, right, an important part of that is SEO. Can you tell us what is SEO and why is it something that law firm owners need to know about?
Yeah, good question. There's a couple of questions in there. First off, SEO, search engine optimization, is kind of a balance of the art and the science of getting Google to recognize your website as an authority in the practice that you practice in and in the geography that you're located in, enough so that Google will deliver your website on page one of results or in a priority position to where when someone does a relevant query, Google will deliver your page as one of the best results for that query. So it's a piece of it is writing excellent content that delivers valuable information from a credible source. And then the other piece of search engine optimization, some would say a larger piece of it, is building authority to your website. And that's typically done through links from authoritative websites, being cited in either journals or news articles, things of that sort. And so our agency helps with that whole process.
Okay. And I've heard the term backlinks used a lot in the world of SEO. Can you talk about what are backlinks?
Yeah, it's kind of a topic I love and hate. because there's so much confusion around it, because there's so many spammers and scammers who market backlinks as a commodity, when really it's probably one of the more pieces of your SEO strategy that really needs to be carefully orchestrated. And what I mean by that is that you can get backlinks from a wide variety of sources. You could even pay for backlinks to your website. You can pay for publishing content on another website. There's a wide variety of ways to get it, but there's only a couple of really good and quote unquote white hat ways to get good backlinks to your website. And I always want, and I'm always seeking for my clients to get relevant, contextually relevant links from really credible websites that link back to their website. So high quality directories like Justia, FindLaw, things that are really very credible and authoritative are great places to get a backlink from. But there are other directories. There's numerous legal directories where you could get backlinks from, but there's also tons of articles that you could publish on websites that provide links and traffic back to your website that help build the authority and credibility of your website over time.
Okay, that's interesting. So And is the goal in that, let's say, having an article published on some website like MarketWatch or, you know,
yeah,
one of those, is the goal in that for readers of the article to see the link to your website and visit that way? Or is it actually more Google, the Google bots that you were trying to impress with this link on another website?
You know, it's both. I'd be disingenuous if I said that we weren't going after the SEO benefit. Of course, that's what we want, the link back to the website. And most SEO people would say anywhere where you're mentioned in the media or online, where there's your brand is mentioned or your name is mentioned and there's not a link back to your website, contact the publisher and say, hey, you mentioned me in this article and please link back to my website. You know, that's just common SEO 101. So it's definitely a balance of expanding the way that you're perceived and your audience, but also it is the technical benefit of getting a link from an authoritative website, for sure. It's both.
Both. Okay, got it. And then when you hear people talking about an SEO optimized website, does that go beyond the content, the legal content articles, the blog articles? What does it mean to have an SEO optimized website?
If you're ready to build and grow a flexible virtual law practice, whether you're going solo for the first time or you have an existing practice, but would like to be able to work less without sacrificing your income, our signature program, The Accelerator, is for you. The Accelerator is a 6-month private, done with you mentorship program to provide you with the exact steps, strategies, and support that you need to build, launch, and grow a flexible virtual law practice. There's honestly nothing else in the marketplace like the Accelerator, and we take a holistic approach to building a flexible law firm around the most important priorities in your life. Our unique combination of training materials, templates, and private mentoring will fast-track your transformation from burnout and missing out to a lawyer who looks forward to Monday mornings. By the end of the program, you will not only have all the information and tools you need to launch your flexible virtual firm, but we will have built out many of the back-end components of your firm together. You'll have a clear, personalized, and actionable business plan to operate and grow your practice with the confidence and support to do it. And last, but certainly not least, you'll join a network of like-minded attorneys to grow with. Enrollment for the Accelerator is open now at lawyeronyourterms.com/accelerator.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's funny. It's kind of a misnomer because the phrase SEO optimized is kind of redundant because search engine optimization optimized website, right? But there's so many articles out there where you'll see that it's we create SEO optimized websites, which it's not grammatically correct, but I guess I'm nitpicking.
Yeah.
But, you know, outside of the content of a website, outside of the authority of the website, one of the other main ways that your website will be noticed and accepted by Google and search engines in general is the technical construction of the website. So are your pages easy to spider for, you know, Googlebot? Are your pages well constructed? Do they have a good title tag? Do they have good heading tags? Are they comprehensive? Do they link out to reputable sources? Is there some personal anecdotes or professional anecdotes that you can insert into the content that makes it real content to the average reader? All of these things really are built into Google's algorithm. Does your page load acceptably fast, or is it a really slug of a website that takes 10 seconds to open a page? All of these things, the technical aspects very, very much matter when it comes to search engine optimization.
Okay, that's interesting. So for someone just getting started and they're listening to this and they're saying, well, I want that. I want a website that all those things. Your team, correct me if I'm wrong, you help with that process, right?
Yeah, we do. We basically want to take all of the responsibility of the website that the client wants to give us off of their plate. So some of our clients come to us and they say, I want you guys to do everything. And I don't want to do anything with my website. I just want the phone to ring and I want to get emails and contact forms of potential new clients.
Right.
So we hit that end of the spectrum. But we have other clients who say, you know, I want you to build the website and continue to optimize it in the way that you guys know best. But I also want to write some blogs occasionally. I want to appear on podcasts and I want you to integrate that content into the website. I want to create some videos and I want you to integrate that into the website. And so those types of things, we can easily collaborate with our clients in that manner too.
Okay, neat. So I want to ask you more about that, but just taking a step back for a moment, back to SEO and content marketing. So just as background, what I teach in my program Accelerator is that your number one priority in marketing should be to build relationships, to build strategic relationships. And after that, it should be creating your own content. And in this content strategy, you should have a piece of regular long form content that the rest of your marketing strategy is built on. So before you're just posting random things on Facebook, maybe consistently or inconsistently, to have something like a blog article, whether that's a weekly blog article or twice a month, that you're creating or outsourcing the creation of this pillar content. And from that content, you can make derivative posts. So you can make the Facebook post, the Instagram post, you know, something to share out on LinkedIn. But that is not only going to make your social media content creation a lot easier, but you're going to be building your digital footprint, SEO.
Yeah.
Tell me, what role in SEO, what is the role of SEO in content marketing and blogging specifically? What should people be considering when they're sitting down and thinking about what kind of articles they're going to write this month?
Yeah. Wow. That's a big question.
Sorry.
You know, the way that I most easily explain it is that think of your website content as kind of two different silos. Your practice pages are the place that will address very specific types of high intent searches. So if you're an estate planning lawyer in Phoenix, you should have a page that's exclusively dedicated to Phoenix estate planning lawyer, and 100% of the content on that page is all about that one topic. And it's a very strategic page where the intent of the person who's going to find that page is to find, vet, and hire an estate planning lawyer in Phoenix. Very, very direct type of transactional search. Whereas your articles can be a little bit more creative that helps support or provide nuanced information to your practice pages. So for instance, maybe there's an Arizona law that's very unique about estate planning that you might want to address in a dedicated article. And that article can serve as the place where someone who's looking for a very specific piece of information might do that Google search, your website might appear, and that person may read that article and say, this person really knows a lot about this topic. What else do they do? And then they'll look at your practice pages, they'll look at your testimonials, and then hopefully eventually contact you. So the content really kind of serves two purposes. It's to help position you in Google and provide information that maybe your practice pages don't. Mm-hmm. But the other piece of benefit that it provides is something called link bait. You want other people to link to those informational articles that help support the authority of your website. Because if you write a really well done article about a very specific type of law, there may be other bloggers or news outlets that link to your article as an authoritative source for the article that they're writing. And that just helps your website gain authority overall when it comes to content. So really feel the needs that people will be looking information. I'm getting jumbled here, but feel the needs that really people are looking for when you're starting to create a target of how you want to be found on search engines.
Yeah, that's great. And it made me think of just an anecdotal example of that from a consumer perspective. My mother-in-law was looking for an estate planning attorney near Dayton, Ohio, specifically about Medicaid trust.
Mm-hmm.
And she went to someone, I think just based on a referral or something, but it was kind of, she went to a small town lawyer who did estate planning, but he didn't know anything about Medicaid trust, which is interesting to me. And any of the estate planning lawyers listening, how you know, just omit that big piece of estate planning anyway. And so she asked me, do you know anyone? I didn't. But what I did was I got on Google and I was looking for a lawyer in that area that had a practice area page that was specifically only about Medicaid trusts. and that had a lot of content, you know, just legal content articles sure. about that topic. So that is, you know, that is how I found her attorney to recommend to her. And the more, as you said, that you can have this pillar content that really is very specific for what people are going to be searching for.
Yeah, now, I don't mean to interrupt, but kind of kind of supplemental to your comment is I had an estate planning lawyer in Oklahoma, and 100% of his business, estate planning and services that revolved around it. And he said, you know, we also do QDROs. And I said, okay, well, that's interesting. Maybe we should create a practice page about QDROs. And so he said, well, I don't think anybody's really going to, you know, look that up because it's such a very specific thing. But lo and behold, it's really become a very thriving piece of his practice that he didn't really think people would be searching for. And he created, we collaboratively created a really good piece of content, and it's very prominently found, and it's really impacted his practice in that regard.
That's great. Do you have any tips? Are there any like tools online that people can use to figure out what people are searching for?
Yeah. So I use a couple of tools. One of the first ones that I use is a tool called Ahrefs and SE Ranking. Those are two tools that people in the SEO industry tend to use quite a bit. Those you can essentially pop in a search phrase, and those tools can give you search volumes of how many times that phrase is generally searched, and also complementary search phrases and their search volume. So if you were to type in QDRO Oklahoma, it would tell you exactly how many people searched that, but it might also tell you here's some other search phrases and this is how much that is searched. But it's also important to know that if your website is fairly new or you've just started the SEO process with a trusted vendor, you may not be able to rank very competitively for those high volume searches. So initially, your strategy might be to target the phrases that get a little less search volume, but you might be more prominently found for.
Got it. And that leads perfectly into my last two questions. And I'll kind of combine it because you're starting to talk about this. But I was wondering, you know, about the, say someone practices estate planning in Nashville, they're sure. solo, they're small, they're concerned about larger firms that have a much larger, you know, digital footprint or money to spend on ads, or even the nationwide practice, like I practice trademark law, a federal practice. And mm-hmm. because I can take clients from anywhere in the country,
yeah.
it also adds to the competition for those SEO words. And so what is your advice for, I guess, looking at what is maybe a less generic search term where the people are still searching for it, but maybe it hasn't occurred to those competitors to invest time in developing content on those keywords?
Yeah, well, first off, don't let fear be the barrier that stops you from forging forward. And the reason is because when someone finds you, whether it's through a search on Google or Bing or ChatGPT, or it's a referral from someone, you want your website to comprehensively list and explain what you do in every area of law. The second thing is if you have a business in Nashville and you're competing against large firms with multiple attorneys and five-figure monthly SEO budgets and advertising budgets, Google does have a piece of their algorithm that's built into the local map section called proximity. And it's very possible for a smaller firm with a less authoritative website to appear prominently in the map section merely because the person who was searching is two or three blocks away. So I really wouldn't let that become a barrier to, I shouldn't start because I have this firm or these three firms that have really saturated content. I would say forge forward. And you will be found, and it will be to your benefit. And the more that you forge forward, the better compounding effect you'll have over time.
Right. Like start that IRA when you're 25.
Exactly. Right? And compounding interest, baby.
Yep. That Chinese proverb, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The best time is now.
Yes. Because you can, the great thing about content, especially a website and content on your website that's directly controllable by you, is you can always go back and update it. You can improve it. You can update it. You can change things on the page. You can delete pages. You can insert new pages. But that's always going to be the hub of your marketing. Most advertising is going to come back to your website in one way or the other.
That's great. So, Doug, another thing I recently talked about on this podcast was the bottleneck effect, I call it. When you are a solo or you have a small team and you've been in business for a little while, your cases are starting to pile up. And so you're busy, but all of your time now is being spent on client work. And those other activities like marketing are being put to, you know, the bottom of your to-do list and they're not getting done. And so it's a nice position to be in the sense of you do have client work coming in, but it is also easy to hit a revenue ceiling. Just because all of your time is filled doesn't mean that you're necessarily earning the income that you want to make, and you need to address that marketing piece. So you have to outsource it. That's the solution, right? You have to outsource either getting help with some of that client work or the marketing piece or both. So how people listening that are in that position now, how can they work with Everest Legal Marketing to help take those items off their plate?
Yeah, well, this will actually be more global advice, not just for working with us, but really for any vendor. The SEO industry and, you know, kind of the marketing industry at large, it can be a very dangerous place to experiment, mainly because there's nothing stopping anybody from saying that they're an expert in SEO. And law firm SEO is some of the most complex and competitive that there is. And amateurs, I'm not saying people don't know what they're doing, but a lot of times I come across an amateur who said that they're an expert in search engine optimization for lawyers, and they can't prove that they've ever been successful marketing a lawyer. And you ask, I would say you really need to come in and directly ask a potential vendor, what firms have you worked with? What have they said about you? How visible are they online? These are things that you should really come to the table expecting that any reputable SEO vendor has prepared to show you, because anybody can say, I do SEO, or maybe they design beautiful websites and they say, oh yeah, I can do that for you as well. That's very, very common, is that a lot of firms hire the website designer to do their SEO and the campaign typically fails. And then the attorney has a bad taste in their mouth about SEO because they hired this person to do SEO and it was never effective, but it was really never implemented properly in the first place. Right. So when you're in that selection process, really be very specific and hold that vendor's feet to the fire when they're presenting and saying how wonderful they are. Who have you worked with? What are their results? How long have you worked with them? What do your past clients say about you? Those are the types of things where you'll really start to see. If they don't have any of that to show you, then it's probably a red flag that they may not be as experienced as you need them to be.
Right. I have come across that when it comes to SEO as well as ads, digital ads.
Yeah.
Where, you know, these are both areas where you can do it remotely. It lends itself to, you know, a flexible business. And people who are looking to work online, you know, they think they can just pick up this skill and offer it in the marketplace. Also, it reminds me of the numerous business coaches out there where their first business is being a business coach. And they're like,
let me tell you how to run a successful seven-figure law firm. And I'm not a lawyer and I've never run a law firm.
Right.
This is my job out of college, you know?
yep. Plenty of those too. So very sage advice there. Well, great. So how can people get in touch with you, Doug, and Everest Legal Marketing?
Easiest way, go to my website, everestlegalmarketing.com. I'm also active on Twitter. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, I do occasionally drop some helpful nuggets about specifically legal marketing, legal SEO, and anything that I find that's kind of interesting going on in the world of SEO, specifically for law firms. I always share it on Twitter because it seems to be one of the best places to kind of get breaking news about what's happening.
Awesome. Well, I will link those in the show notes so everyone can reach out to you. And thank you so much, Doug. Thank you for joining me today and taking the time to talk with us.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed it. And thank you for introducing me to your audience.
Thank you.
That's all for today. If you enjoyed this episode, it would mean the world to me and really help us grow if you would take a moment to go to your podcast app where you listen and leave us a review. If you know a lawyer who you think would enjoy this podcast, please take a screenshot of your favorite episode and send it to them or tag them in a post. And before we leave, I just want to remind you that you are more than just a lawyer, and you can lawyer on your own terms. I'll see you next week.